Welcome to Between the Lines here at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, America's number one local sports bar as voted by USA Today. We're in the Body Armor Coca-Cola studios, and we will be live every Sunday morning from 11 to 12, covering the best of the NFL, college football, baseball, from the minors to the majors. I'm Jake Magruder here with my co-partner, Tristan Kennedy. How are we doing, Tristan?
Pretty good. What about yourself?
Doing pretty good today. We are live on Radio St. Pete and YouTube. And make sure to follow us on Instagram at Between the Lines Show and on TikTok at Between the Lines Hour. Now, I think
we got some pretty good hot takes ready for this week.
Yeah,
don't
and
we?
You know, this is the Bucks pregame show that you are listening to right now.
Yeah, the Bucks play the Cardinals at 1 p.m.
Absolutely now.
At home at Raymond James Stadium, just over there in right on Dale Mabry in Tampa.
And we will be there next week.
We will for the Saints.
At the game, yes. We will be getting some amazing content there, so definitely make sure you are following us on every social media.
Tampa Bay Sports Hour on TikTok. And
not
Tampa Bay Sports Hour. That
Between
was our previous
hour.
Show. Between the Lines Hour on TikTok, yep. And Between the Lines Show on Instagram.
And if you find one of them, you can find all of them.
Yeah,
you
know, they're all connected. We even have a website and everything. Everything's set up pretty well. So can we get to your hot take, Jake? What do you have set up this week as far as your hot take goes?
So I want to say this because I've seen a lot of chatter about the Bucks, and I just want to give some reassurance to some Bucks fans. And this is a hot take if you go on Instagram or TikTok or anything like that. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are still an elite team, and they are going to get guys back, and they are going to make a deep playoff run. What do you think about that?
I actually agree with that, you know, and that's what you see out of this team, you know, the last 4 years in a row, pretty much. You know, my hot take is actually pretty close to that, but in the opposite direction. It's kind of in a more negative direction. My hot take is that, you know, the biggest issue with the Bucks right now, you know, every team deals with injuries every single season, so you can't just fully place it on injuries. You can't blame one individual aspect of the game. I'd have to say it's Todd Bowles' inability to deal with midseason adversity and hold up. You know, every season it seems like, especially last season, you'll see no matter who the offensive coordinator is, the team goes through a slump in the middle of the year. The team will go on a losing streak typically, or will lose a couple big games, or even mid-sized games that they really should win, or just, you know, the fans were hopeful or had their eye on winning. But, you know, just because Todd Bowles is focused on other things, you know, whatever it may be, that he doesn't really handle the midseason adversity pretty well.
I could kind of agree on that, you know, but I would actually kind of like to say that this year has been a little different compared to last year's. You know, if you take a look at it, the Buccaneers have had a real struggle early in the season. You know, back in, I believe, the first year at Baker Mayfield, 2022, it was a 3-7 start, I believe, and then they ended up 9-8 and beating the Eagles in the playoffs in the wild card round. But it kind of goes back to last year as well, where I don't quite remember the exact record, but they started off kind of poor, and then middle of the season they kind of got this like average team. They beat some bad teams, and then they really went on a hot streak at the end of the season. And I think that's what we're going to see again this season.
Yeah, and I honestly agree. I think that it'll be a lot of the same stuff, and I really hope that it will, because they always finish the season pretty strong. But
get to the playoffs and anything can happen.
Yeah, I just hope they wrap things up and get things together right now.
Absolutely. Now, I see you're wearing a number 24, a little bit of a throwback jersey today. What's this on about?
So Cadillac Williams, he was a running back, you know, when I first started watching football very early on, even almost roughly before my time. He was, I forget which quarterback exactly he played with, but this is actually a practice jersey. It wasn't worn by him, but you could purchase these. Now the practice jerseys look different. They're very reminiscent of just like the current jerseys. But yeah, this is a throwback practice jersey from when Cadillac Williams actually played. That's when this was purchased. It was actually given to me by my father. He had 968 rushing attempts with the Bucks. He ran for 3,677 yards. He had 20 rushing touchdowns. He averaged 3.8 yards per carry, so he wasn't, you know, the longest rusher in the world. But he had 134 receptions with almost 1,000 receiving yards, 4 receiving touchdowns for a total of 24 touchdowns. He was a landmark with the Buccaneers for a time. It was a good couple seasons before he ended up getting traded. But he was from Auburn. He was an absolute machine and one of my favorite running backs of all time, definitely.
Auburn. Now, there's a cornerback on the team that I like that went to Auburn, and we won't go too much into Jamel Dean here. But getting into my jersey, as you can see behind me, I have an Antoine Winfield jersey. Not wearing it. It is a... One, it is signed, so I don't want to mess up the signature.
Yeah, never want to wear a signed jersey.
Yeah, and two, it's you know, only three sizes too big for me. So, well, actually, if you're counting jerseys, it's actually four. So,
well, yeah, it would look like a dress.
Definitely look a little bit too big, so didn't want to wear that today. But the reason I wanted to bring an Antoine Winfield jersey is I kind of wanted to bring up the conversation, and we saw it a few weeks ago, but where is Turnover Tweez?
You know, they call him Mr. Paper Skin and Glass Bones. Talking about Jamel Dean. Going back to Jamel Dean. They call Jamel Dean Mr. Paper Skin and Glass Bones. He's been out, and I feel like Antoine Winfield playing, you know, without a Jamel Dean.
Week by week, you know.
Yeah,
It's been a few weeks. And we saw when he did step up against, what team was it? The Saints, I believe?
Yes, I think so.
He had what should have been three turnovers, but they just... Yeah, took them all back on him. Should have been three touchdowns. How do you call a whistle when the play is still going on?
It doesn't make sense.
It needs to be something where the whistle needs to be blown multiple times in case they accidentally mess up or something.
You know,
there's a lot of things we can go on about officiating.
When I first saw that, I initially thought, you know, the NFL always had that rule where once a new play started, you couldn't go back and review the previous play. It turns out, I was talking to someone...
That happened too.
Yeah, and in the NFL, in the last couple off seasons, somewhere in there, it wasn't mentioned because, you know, the other things like the tush push were being debated, you know, the NFL Players Association. One of the things that actually was passed or like they are allowed to do now is an outside refereeing, you know, like center outside, probably in New York or outside of the stadium somewhere, they can actually call into the stadium during a game if they see a call that is, you know, subpar or not as what they would want or not up to the quality they think it should be. They're allowed to call in and actually manually have them review it another time, which is what happened during that Saints game.
And what's so confusing to me is the fact that how do you not go and do that during that play? That's very clearly nobody stopped playing, right? Everybody, I mean, it was as soon as he picked the ball up, which it was clearly a fumble, they reviewed it and counted it as a fumble. Antoine Winfield picked it up and ran. Nobody was close to him. Nobody was going to catch him. It should have been a touchdown for the Bucs. There was multiple plays like that for Tweez, and it's really unfortunate because those plays do really go a long way in terms of like all pro voting, and it really does mean something to those players because it's the potential of a Hall of Fame career or not.
Yeah, another thing to mention is, you know, the players themselves, they work so hard for these, like, turnovers and whatnot. And, it really messed up the defensive momentum of that game. And,
Definitely. I mean, we still ended up getting the win, the Buccaneers did, but at the end of the day, it still did affect the team, you know, it's... And after that game, you know, they did go on this losing streak, and we talked about that before. There was a very big moment where the team really just hasn't played well the last few weeks. So it's extremely unfortunate, but at the end of the day, the Buccaneers are about to go on a hot streak with the schedule that they're facing, and I'm pretty excited. You know, the Cardinals, the Raiders, the Dolphins, all these teams, they are definitely going to go on this hot streak. There is no doubt in my mind about it.
So, yeah, no, I completely agree, actually. Yeah, it works, you know, really well. The Buccaneers, just overall, this defense, I feel like they can step things up eventually and, you know, improve things overall.
Absolutely. Now, I kind of want to get into some MLB free agency updates because they're, you know, it's still a little bit of a slow part of the offseason, but there's definitely some moves picking up here. And I want to get your opinion on the Ryan Helsley contract. Do you think that was too much or too little? What do you think about that contract that the Orioles gave him?
I don't really know. I think they're kind of they're looking for a change from last season, you know. And so I feel like that paycheck will kind of inspire some change in around their whole organization.
And Felix Bautista will be out for the entire season, so that's definitely unfortunate. And I mean, very much in big need for a closer.
They're definitely putting their money where their mouth is with this. You know?
And, you know, the Orioles, I got to give them credit. Although I am a Rays fan, I don't want to give any AL East team credit. I have to give them credit. The owners or the GM said, we need an outfield bat. We need a big bullpen piece, and we need a starting pitcher. And what have they done? They've got Taylor Ward for Grayson Rodriguez. They went out and signed Ryan Helsley. and they haven't gotten a pitcher yet, but I mean, it's still November. They have plenty of time. All the top free agent pitching options are still on the market other than Dylan Cease, which we'll talk about in a second, but there's definitely a they're definitely doing what they said they were going to do, which is amazing.
Yeah, no, it's just staying true to their word and trying to build a you know, foundation around what they have.
Absolutely. Now, I wanted to also ask you about that Dylan Cease contract. Well, actually, first, I'll get into what I think about the Ryan Helsley contract. And to me, that's just such a major overpay. When you take a look at what the Blue Jays paid Jeff Hoffman just a season ago, 3 years, $33 million, how does a guy like Ryan Helsley, who just had a 7.8 ERA with the Orioles last, or with the Mets last season, get a $14 million multi-year deal as a relief pitcher? I mean, it's so confusing on how a guy can get that type of contract after being completely horrible.
Especially when there are guys like Pete Fairbanks that are just walking,
yeah,
you know,
Pete
going
Fairbanks,
to other teams.
Pete Fairbanks, nobody was willing to trade for $11 million. So, you know, maybe a team isn't willing to give up a player plus pay him $11 million. But in my opinion, I'm signing Pete Fairbanks for a one-year $11 million deal over Ryan Helsley for a one-year $11 million deal, much less a two-years $28 million deal.
Yeah, I don't know. It was kind of like a head scratcher just overall, I think, for everyone when that trade went through.
Yeah,
or not the trade, but the extension.
Now, I want to ask you about the Dylan Cease contract. Now, what do you think about the Dylan Cease contract? Do you think it's
overpaid? 7 years?
Yeah.
7 years is a long time, man.
The way I look at it is pitchers are definitely better in the long-term run than hitters are.
And I have to say, they're also at a premium. They're very valuable.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people, I want to give some reassurance here. A lot of people are looking at Dylan Cease and being like, what happened to the game I used to love? You know, a guy who with a 4.5 ERA is getting a seven-year deal worth this much money. And I just kind of want to give some reassurance. Dylan Cease, although he did have the Platinum Glove winner on his team, had some of the worst defense possible. He had a much lower FIP, which basically just, it measures how a pitcher is if things that only they can control. So strikeouts, home runs, and walks. And he had a much above average FIP. He has very high quality pitches. So this isn't a guy who they're kind of banking on getting back to previous years. They know he's still at that talent. It's just about him getting to where he was in terms of results and defense on the field. And the Blue Jays have a very high-quality defense out there.
Yeah, and I was about to say, you know, you saw it in this World Series. They were so close to winning it so many times. And I feel like they were looking for that one little aspect of something that could improve their overall quality just as a roster, as a team overall, as their bullpen. And I feel like, you know, Cease may very well just be that little piece that they needed, you know, for all of them, either mentally or physically, you know, to push them that extra step and win that World Series.
And to me, this is more of a, I want to say this is more of a safety blanket for them. You know, Kevin Gausman is entering his final year of being under contract. And, you know, I assume they would love to get him back on an extension. But I do believe that Dylan Cease is kind of a blanket to where they're like, all right, well, this year we're going to have an insane pitching rotation. And then if we do lose Gausman, it won't be that bad because of the fact that we've now got Dylan Cease, who, in my opinion, is a more talented pitcher.
Yeah, I would like to say, though, it's good to see that they are not only just saying, hey, we need to win now, but they're also setting up seven-year contracts with somewhat reliable pitchers that, you know, you can say, hey, down the line, will we need this guy? Will we be able to use him, option him? You know, it's that sort of thing where they're playing the long game, and I feel like that's very smart if you're a financially viable team like the Blue Jays.
And I don't think the Blue Jays are going to be done anytime soon. You know, you take a look at what they've been in rumors for the last few years. You know, Shohei Ohtani. I mean, there's been Juan Soto. They've been in countless guys like top three, but it comes down to the fact that Canadian tax is a lot higher, so players typically do not sign with them. But, you know, if they can go ahead and get Bo Bichette back, I think this team has a real chance of becoming a dynasty with a big three of Treya Savage. And I won't even mention Dylan Cease. I think they could have a big three of Treya Savage, Bo Bichette, and Vlad Jr.
Yeah, and that was my first remark after the World Series ended, you know, that I feel like they wouldn't try to make any major trades, you know, trade any big names away, you know, get you know, money for certain guys and money in certain situations where they could apply it differently. I think they were just trying to strengthen that original core that they had on the field, you know, that interior defense. You know, they have solid outfielders, especially, you know, when the interior defense is playing better, when they eventually got Bichette back. I feel like they're just trying to commit to that team and try to give everyone on that team a ring, and, you know, rather than just, you know, shop it out and try again with a different team next year.
Absolutely. Now, do you want to get into some Lightning updates here?
Yeah, the Lightning are riding a really mid-season high. They're on a 7-game winning streak. Their goal differential has been really good in the last 5 games. They scored 21 goals while only allowing 8. So Andrei Vasilevskiy has been playing at an all-time defensive high. Yeah, just their goaltending alone, you know, Andrei Vasilevskiy, not even just Andrei Vasilevskiy, but every guy that's been, you know, in front of the net this season, they have registered at least one shutout in their last 5 games. In that 3-2 win over the Philadelphia Flyers. Jonas Johansson, the other goaltender next to Andrei Vasilevskiy, he only had to make 12 saves in a recent 4-1 win over the Rangers. It was 2 nights ago or 3 nights ago. And their strong defensive play, it's really limiting their opponent's high danger offensive scoring. The individual players, Nikita Kucherov, he's on a 9-game point streak. He's had multi-point games over all those games, and he's actually leading a few statistics on the overall NHL leaderboard with his points alone. Brandon Hagel has looked very good, very solid, especially coming back. You know, with all these young guys, and just like even with the little things like when Braden Point was a scratch just because he, you know, he missed meetings. I really like how John Cooper's using these younger guys. I say that every week, but John Cooper really is just doing such a good job of instilling these younger guys in the system. And, you know, even when you have big marquee offensive guys like Braden Point maybe missing a meeting, getting scratched from a game, you know, you have guys stepping in and filling those gaps, and that's what makes this club so good.
Now, I'm going to go ahead and say this. I think the Lightning are the best team in the NHL. You know, when you look at since October 24th, the Lightning are 15-3-0. They have 30 points, which is 137 point pace, 3.67 goals a game, which is second in the NHL, 2.28 goals against game, which is also second in the NHL, and an 88.9 PK percentage, which is third in the NHL.
Yeah, another thing you're seeing, especially offensively, is just really selfless playing. You're seeing multiple guys get assists on these goals. Just because they're getting the puck up there and in the net doesn't mean that they're playing selfish, doesn't mean that they're, you know, trying to just do their own thing. They really are spreading this puck around to absolutely everyone, even defenders, and it's creating a lot of good scoring opportunities for people, especially like Jake Guentzel. He's looked very good this season. And the Lightning are riding a very good hot streak right now. I feel like they could definitely be Stanley Cup contenders again, just like they were the last couple years going into this playoffs eventually.
And it's kind of feeling like a
dynasty. That's looking down the road.
It's kind of looking like a dynasty at this point. You know, honestly, you know, back in 2020, 2021, they won 2 times in a row, and they've been back again. And, I mean, it looks like they are in serious contention of being back again. It almost feels like an Astros situation here.
Yeah, the Lightning were really what started the Tampa Bay kind of moniker for Tampa as a whole. They really just instilled a winning culture, and Tampa kind of built around that confidence, you know?
Absolutely. Now, do you want to get into some, let's see, you want to get into some NFL picks here?
Sure, just around the league tonight. We got a pretty good slate of games today. You know, should we cover the Thanksgiving and the Friday night?
Yeah, we'll do that since that was a major part of the games this week, you know?
Yeah, took quite a few slots.
Yeah, there, 4 different games. You know, I want to talk about this Bears game, actually. We've got a guy, college football scout, coming on here in a few minutes, about 10 minutes. So I want to talk about the Bears, which is actually his favorite team, Chicago Bears. Now, they beat the Philadelphia Eagles.
Wow. I have to say, wow. I couldn't believe it. Watching it, truly, you know, they pulled out all the stops that they needed to. Philadelphia really didn't look like themselves at all. But Chicago, I mean, they are really a contender now. They're looking good.
They started off the season 0-2, and they're, what, 9-3 now? So
yeah,
it's amazing what they've been able to do. So, but I also kind of want to talk about the Eagles. I've seen a lot of Eagles fans saying, fire Kevin Petula, the offensive coordinator. And There's no reason for that.
Yeah, that's a little bit extreme, especially coming from the standpoint of a Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan, you know, that has seen multiple offensive coordinators come in and leave in just the past 3 years. You want a guy that you can count on. You want a consistent offensive coordinator. Even if he's not, like, the flashiest in the league, he gets the job done most of the time, and the Eagles are still a contending team. They're a good team, so there's absolutely no reason to, you know, be making all these, like, claims that they should be getting rid of their offensive coordinator or, you know, making big front office changes or anything. As long as they stay consistent, they literally just won the season. They are world champions. They're defending world champions. It makes no sense.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm going to say this. If you're an Eagles fan and you want to fire Kevin Petula because your offense isn't moving as well as it did last year with Kellen Moore, how about you teach your quarterback to make the throws? Because that is the main thing that I'm seeing when I watch the Philadelphia Eagles. The quarterback is missing throws. And we can go all day about being Jalen Hurts haters or whether or not he's actually good. But he has not been successful this season. It's teams are able to die on the run game, game plan heavily against it. So no, you're not going to be able to get the run game going, no matter who your offensive coordinator is, because every team can just bank on stopping that, and they know they're going to beat you.
Yeah, as long as you can kind of defend the run on the inside, a little bit on the outside, and then have general good zone coverage, you beat the Eagles. You know,
I think a zone coverage is too complicated for Jalen Hurts to understand.
Yeah, no, really, it's strange. But yeah, it's not. I wouldn't say that the Philadelphia Eagles are falling apart by any means. They're still, like I said, they're still a very solid team, great team. They beat the Bucs this season. You know, they look good. It's just.
They didn't look good against the Bucs. Let's be honest.
The Bucs played very sloppy.
They were absolutely horrible, and it just started off with a 14-0 lead that
and a blocked punt and bad calls.
And that just took the momentum for the first half, and then as soon as the Bucs went back out there for the second half, they absolutely dominated the Eagles. And if we go to the playoffs and we face the Eagles, I am extremely confident in what we're able to do against them.
Definitely.
Now,
just not the Rams.
Oh, yeah, no. No, I do not want to see the Rams in the playoff. That is the one team in the NFC that I would be the most scared about. Now, I want to get into some... Let's do the first NFL game for Sunday, or for the Thursday game. Let's do Bengals versus Ravens. How about Lamar Jackson that game? How about Lamar Jackson the last three games?
Yeah, I mean...
What is going on with Lamar Jackson?
I don't know. I want to say that he's in a weird headspace because he was coming off of an injury that kind of affected his, you know, entire mentality on the season, but I don't know. I can't even tell you... Okay, so I went to a Baltimore Ravens game this season. I was there for the Texans at the Ravens. I didn't get to see Lamar Jackson play in person, but what I did see a lot of is when they didn't have Lamar Jackson, John Harbaugh, all he could do was run the ball directly up the middle with Derrick Henry, which the Texans were able to stop beautifully because they have one of the best defenses in the league. But just every team now, even teams with bad defenses like the Bengals, they can read the fact that Derrick Henry is going to be running up the gut for, you know, 80% of the snaps. And
or Lamar Jackson, it's just going to be a read option. It's a read option. Lamar Jackson has become a much improved passer, but he's kind of going back to his rookie days.
I never liked how people referred to him as like a running back rather than a quarterback. You know, he is a good passer. He has good downfield vision. He really is a pretty solid quarterback, like throwing wise. You know, running definitely, he's one of the best in the league. But he's kind of looking underdeveloped. It's very odd.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, first game with Joe Burrow being back, definitely a big win for the Bengals, who still have their hopes on the playoffs. And it's going to take a lot to get him there.
Yeah, I feel like Joe Burrow and that win was just it created so much momentum for the Bengals already, and I feel like they're going to try. You know, talking about riding highs, I feel like they're going to try to ride that high as far as they can, as far as it'll take them, and you know, feed off of that win versus, you know, a contender in the AFC. You know, maybe not this season, but a typical contender, and I feel like they're just going to try to build off of that, and you know, and stack some more wins on top of it.
Absolutely, and they're going to need to if they want to have any chance of making the playoffs. But how about the Dallas Cowboys and the Kansas City Chiefs game? What is going on with the Kansas City Chiefs this season?
The Kansas City Chiefs, well, okay, the Kansas City Chiefs are having a very strange run this season, but I do also have to credit the Cowboys with being on a great run this season. They do look like a very, very, very solid team in the NFC.
Jerry Jones might have fixed the team.
Yeah, no, truly. Especially at the trade deadline with everything that he did.
Getting, you know, Quinnen Williams, watching that game on Thanksgiving, Quinnen Williams is a real force. And he, I mean, looking back the last few weeks, you could argue the Cowboys had the I mean, other than the Bengals, really the worst defense in the NFL. Maybe you can argue is worse than the
Especially
Bengals.
After losing Micah Parsons. That was a big blow for them.
Yeah, and then, you know, he's going to go out and trade for a guy like Quinnen Williams, who honestly revolutionized their defense last week. I mean, that was a completely different defense that we watched. They he still just, let up 28 points, but they were swallowing Patrick Mahomes. And
I have to say, it almost looked like the 2021 Super Bowl. Like, he was just being chased the whole game in the backfield
and it
trying to make plays.
It wasn't even always him. He was just creating such a big force on the D-line that he was drawing double teams, and he was more of a force than he was even looking out to be.
Yeah, he was adding so much pressure. I feel like Patrick Mahomes wasn't able to make like decisive, you know, decisions based on the game, and he wasn't able to read the defense as well because the defense was constantly in his face.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, last game here on Thanksgiving, Packers versus Lions. What do you see from that game?
That game, I mean, they're both great teams. They both have a chance, and I think that, you know, interdivision, it's close. They have so much deep hate for each other. But, you know, I think the Packers really deserve that win. They just played harder.
I'll say this. Jordan Love was kind of looking like 2007 Aaron Rodgers out there.
Oh, definitely, actually.
I mean, you know, when you look at the stat line, it's not all too impressive. 18 for 30, 234 yards, and 4 touchdowns, no picks. But watching him play there, I mean, he was completely dominant. There was almost nothing the Lions could do.
Yeah, it was insane.
And I do want to say this. I want to see this Lions stop going for it on fourth down so much. You know, it was cool for a few years, but now I feel like teams are really starting to pick up on what they're doing, and it really hasn't worked this year. And we saw it with the Lions. I believe they're 7-5 now, and not even in the playoff. You know, not even in the playoffs right now. If the season ended today, everything can change by then. But it's still a very weird sight to see no Chiefs and no Lions in the playoffs.
Yeah, it was good to have that analysis of the games that have already been played. But just quickly before we get to the segment where we do have on the the college football scout, I would just like to do a quick rundown of the schedule with you, the NFL schedule,
and then we'll go winner who's gonna win.
Yeah, who's gonna win? Who's gonna lose? Cardinals at Buccaneers, 1 p.m.
I mean, come on, I'm gonna go with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers easily.
I'm gonna go with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as well. The Cardinals are very injured, and the Buccaneers need this one at home. The Rams at the Panthers.
I mean, we watched the same Rams team last week.
Give me
here
the Los Angeles
First
Rams.
Sports Bar and Grill. You've got to go with the Rams against any team in the league right now.
The San Francisco 49ers at the Cleveland Browns.
I mean, it's the 49ers again. Brock Purdy is back.
Yeah, no, it's just like
and they were good with Mac Jones, so they're only going to be better with the real starter.
Yeah, it's a pretty good game, but I'd say the 49ers. Texans at Colts. Give me the Colts.
Yeah, you got to go with the Colts again. Is CJ Stroud back?
I don't know. He's either this week or next week, I can tell you. It looks like CJ Stroud is actually active, so yeah, he will be playing.
Okay.
Saints at Dolphins.
That's just as bad as it gets there, you know.
Yeah, not much of a matchup there, but I'll take the Saints, you know, to strengthen the NFC South a little bit.
I'll go with the Dolphins.
Falcons at Jets.
Falcons at Jets. I'm going to go with the I'm going to go with the Jets.
Yeah, give me the Jets and a little bit of an upset there at home at MetLife Stadium.
Yeah,
it's a little colder.
A little colder. Atlanta's typically pretty warm, you know. It gets a little colder.
And they play in an indoor stadium, so they're used to an indoor, you know.
And with the Jets, both teams are now starting technically backups, I guess. Mm-hmm. Tyrod Taylor's, I mean, I guess he's a starter now technically over Justin Fields, but I'm going to say easily. I think the Jets are going to win in a blowout there against Kirk Cousins.
Jaguars at Titans.
Jaguars at Titans. You got to go with the Jaguars easily.
Yeah, give me the Jaguars. Okay, now for the 4 p.m. games at 4:05 p.m., we have the Minnesota Vikings at the Seattle Seahawks. I am very excited to see Max Brosmer start at quarterback over J.J. McCarthy, who's currently out with a concussion. He is a Minnesota Gopher legend.
He was an amazing quarterback in college. Not the biggest school, but it definitely was an amazing scenario.
Yeah. And just to quickly, before we take this call, just to quickly wrap up these scores, the Las Vegas Raiders at the Los Angeles Chargers. Give me the Chargers.
I'm also going to go with the Chargers.
The Buffalo Bills at the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I'm also going to go with the Steelers.
I'm going to go with the Bills.
I mean the Bills. Sorry.
The Denver Broncos. For the 8:20 primetime game tonight, we have the Denver Broncos at the Commanders.
I mean, you got to go with the Broncos. Still no Jaden Daniels. It's absolutely the Broncos.
Yeah, a lot of people argue that the Broncos have played one of the easier schedules in the NFL this year, but I have to say that the Broncos will take that W over the Commanders in Washington, D.C. How are we doing? Who are we talking to today right now?
Hey, what's up, guys? How y'all doing?
How's it going? This is Ben Wurzbacher, scout at SIU. You know, how you doing, Ben?
Doing great, you know.
Okay, so
day, another opportunity.
Absolutely. Now, I want to get into some college football with you since you are a college football scout. What are your thoughts on just college football as a whole right now with the season wrapping up?
I think it's definitely in the spot, especially now as we're getting into playoff time. It's definitely getting better. NFCS is also starting their playoffs, so it's just good on that. So, you know, it's pretty good. But for things like recruiting and, like, portal, it's definitely not where it should be. Always improving there, but nothing I can do. So I just do my job and do it at a good level. So
I have to ask, you know, you're kind of up north in that little area of the nation. How did you feel about Ohio State marching into Michigan and beating them yesterday?
He is an Ohio State fan, so.
Oh, I did not know that. So if we have a Buckeye fan. How do you feel about your Buckeyes beating the Michigan Wolverines?
Before I did all this, I was a big Ohio State guy, so definitely happy, you know. They went down and get the win, which is good for them because they needed that one, 4 in a row. Undefeated season, get to go into playoffs now. Big Ten championship and all that. So,
who do you think is going to win the college football playoffs? You know, bias aside in total here.
I'm still probably going to go like Ohio State, but to me it also depends on who wins Big Ten championship. So I think because Ohio State last year, what they did is they were the ninth seed, then they went into the playoffs and blew out like every other team they faced. So I think they could definitely do that again.
Absolutely. Now, I don't know if you've seen this, but just recently, a few minutes ago here, the Tulane head coaches being hired by Florida. Do you have any thoughts on that as a whole?
Oh, yeah. Tulane, great program. Yeah, what they do down there is amazing. So if he brings most of his guys with him, bro, Florida's getting a great coach, great program, great recruiting. They're obviously going to just – I think they could easily get back up in the SEC ranking, which they need to be. So, you know, they're that part of the area and all that, so –
Do you think that could mean anything for the rest of the conference, that the Tulane Green Wave might not be as strong as they were this season in the last couple seasons?
Oh, yeah, that could definitely help teams like USF and teams like maybe even like Temple, but really any team, because Tulane has been such a powerhouse for the last like couple years. So just being able to, you know, now that he's leaving, and obviously depends on who Tulane brings in. But no, it could definitely mean well for like teams like USF, Navy, and all them just to like jump up and hey, maybe make the playoffs. I think Tulane was in like pace to make the playoffs. So
what are your thoughts on the inner SEC news of the possibility of Lane Kiffin going over to LSU?
I think it's interesting because he's leaving, in my opinion, a top 10 job at Ole Miss to go to a top 5 in LSU. But if he obviously saw the money number, but I think it's a good move for him because LSU obviously they can bring in like anybody.
And jumping conferences really quick, do you think James Franklin is going to make any noise at Virginia Tech in the next few seasons?
Oh yeah, I think he's going to kill it down there because just what he's done already by bringing in like all the Penn State guys that he recruited. So I think he's going to kill it.
Yeah, no, sorry I had to ask so many coaching questions. There's just been so many detrimental coaching changes throughout the college football scape this season.
We really haven't even got through all of them with USF, you know, potentially losing Alex Galesh.
Yeah, no, that's
already
a big one.
I think he already signed.
No, it came out as if he signed, and now he's kind of playing it down and saying he hasn't accepted it yet. So it's kind of a behind-the-scenes thing right now, whether or not he takes the Arkansas job, but I still do believe that he is going to leave because it is a much better opportunity
for him. It's an SEC program.
Yeah, it's a much better opportunity for him, so I believe he will take it.
Well, just so y'all know, I'm hearing that it's Auburn.
Auburn with him too, wow. That's, you know, there definitely is going to be a lot of teams calling him after what he's done with the USF program over the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at what he's been working with you know, he's done absolutely – he's done numbers for the program. They look as good as they did in 2007, really, with Jim Leavitt. You know, they've made so much noise being ranked multiple times this college football season. What do you think the move is for USF if they were to maybe lose an Alex Golesh, maybe lose some of their top recruits? You know, as a recruiter yourself, what would your first thought be to do if that happened to your program?
Well, yeah, like – so that happened in the case with us. Like, the kid, like, he just decommitted. So it's like sometimes, you know, it's just got to go out and get the next guy, you know. So just always next guy up because, hey, we have databases of going down multiple lines and all that. So it's definitely just, you know, finding the next guy and just building that rapport with the guy and, you know, just getting him.
Definitely, yeah. Football is a very next man up kind of mentality driven sport, and it trickles all the way down to the recruiting process, especially now in the age of NIL. How do you think NIL has affected your job personally? Or were you working with this before NIL was instituted, or have you seen it change college football in any ways?
No, this is my first. I've only done one full year, so for NIL in general, it's something, you know, because it's just like now it's not where as much as where like, hey, do you want to play there? It's like, hey, are you being paid to play there? It's more just like contracts now. So
I definitely do think it makes a really big impact when it comes to players, because a team, you know, an FCS school like the school that you're at, you know, they might have a guy who's hometown and might want to stay there. But if he's got SEC schools offering him real money to go, you know, millions of dollars to go play for them, there's no doubt that he's going to take that money and go play for them.
Yeah.
Done. 100%.
Well, you know, with NIL, do you think that, you know, in a lot of ways you could argue, well, now that you can offer players things and it's not, you know, against the rules and you don't have to do it under the table or whatever, would that make your job a little easier? Or do you think that because you have to incentivize all these, you know, kids with specific things that you maybe wouldn't have been able to before, it makes it a little harder because they expect more?
That's a great question. But I think it makes it like a little harder. Just because then you got to, like, because you have to, that means now you have to keep up with, like, more money numbering and all that. So you got to make sure you have the money to be able to give out all these, like, scholarships and all these incentives. But because you just can't guarantee it to every kid sometimes. So it's a little tough. Like, because, like for us, we're not that, like, obviously, we don't have the most money in the world. So we got to do with what we got. So.
Yeah, and you've got to kind of pick and choose whether or not you're going to go out and get a bunch of guys on, you know, lower money, or if you're going to go out and get two or three guys on, you know, really big money. So it's yeah, definitely a challenge, and you've got to try to budget it the right way.
Yeah. We don't got that much, so it's just, you know, just doing what we got.
Now, kind of wrapping up some college football here, and then we'll get your take on some MLB and some NFL to wrap it up. But is there any team that you think is kind of a sleeper right now in college football?
I'm gonna go group of five, because I watch a lot of group of five. So I'm gonna go with, like, one team that I think would be good in the next like couple is probably, like, let's go like Temple, because I like Temple. I like what they're doing. They got a good group of guys. They're I like the area that they got, like Pennsylvania, great area. So I think they could be – they'll be a team to watch out for in the American for the next couple, especially, like I said, with y'all, like I said, with, like, Tulane leaving. So Temple could definitely jump in there, you know.
And just continuing that conversation we were just having, as of 11 minutes ago, you were correct. It does seem that Alex Golesh is being hired by the Auburn Tigers to be their next football head coach. Obviously, it could be alleged as of right now, as was the Arkansas news when that first broke, but it's looking, as of 11 minutes ago, that Alex Golesh is an Auburn Tiger.
Yeah, that'd be a good move for him, and obviously that'd be tough on USF because he did a really great job of rebuilding that program, so...
And with Alex Golesh potentially leaving, we'll say the scenario where he does leave. Do you think now they will lose quarterback Byron Brown?
Either to the draft or the transfer portal?
I think to the transfer portal makes the most sense, because I think he still – obviously, if he has one more year, I think he's going to take that other year just to keep boosting his stock. Because I don't see a reason for him to right now just go to the NFL.
Just to be a late-round draft pick, maybe even undrafted.
Yeah. Especially because I don't know what next year's looking like, so
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Jets might be looking at him right now as the future. You never know.
Hey, the Jets look at any quarterback that can throw a football, so.
Hey, the Cleveland Browns might be looking at him like he could be he'd be an option. That's true.
Or they might go with Shadur, who knows.
All right, now, just some takes on the MLB, you know. Any teams you're looking out for in free agency to have, you know, big free agency? Obviously, you know, you're a Cubs fan, so you looking out for them to have some big signings?
Yeah, I just want them to sign one pitcher. That's all I want. I just need, like, a Michael King. Really, just anybody that can pitch at a high level. That's all the Cubs need. So,
absolutely. And getting, you know, Shota Imanaga back on the one-year $20 million deal is definitely a big deal for you guys.
Yeah.
And next up, some NFL. You know, obviously your Chicago Bears beat the Eagles this past Friday. You know, any other teams you're looking at to have a great season that are, you know, kind of scary in the playoffs?
Obviously, I know y'all not gonna like the Eagles, but I think the Panthers, when it gets to around that time, I think they're gonna do well because I like their weapons. They got Tet Leggett started to kind of show up a little bit. Their line's playing a lot better than expected. Bryce Young's been playing good ball. Rico Dowdle, probably one of the best backs in the league right now. So, and then defensively, they're still pretty young, got a good group. So,
absolutely. Now, I want to get your take on this since, you know, we're streaming live on Radio St. Pete. You know, everybody in the Tampa Bay area can locally listen to this. What are your takes on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and how they've been playing football this season?
They've been up and down. I think they could definitely obviously do better, but like injuries also aside, but because Mike Evans is what he's been out for how long now? I don't know the exact time, but he's been out for
a few weeks, but he's getting closer to returning. Yeah. He's no longer in a sling. I believe he is back to working, and you know, Jalen McMillan, another standout wide receiver from last season, is also cleared by medical staff, which we haven't even mentioned yet, but he has been cleared by medical staff and he is ready to make a play and come back to practice next week.
Yeah, because once those Bucks get healthy, I think they're gonna go crazy. So
now, prediction.
I think we lost him.
I think we lost him too. You know, but let's just get into some Buccaneers talk here. Oh, we got him back.
Okay, we got him back on the line.
All right, we can hear you.
Got me up. Yeah, all right. Yeah.
All right. So, getting back to it, what would be a scenario? You know. Do a normal one and then a bit of a hot take. What do you think a possible Super Bowl matchup could be for the NFL?
Possible. I'm just going to have to throw the Rams in there. I think they're the team to beat in the NFC. I don't think that there's a better football team right now. So I'm going to go – I guess they're obviously the two top seeds, but I'm going to go with the Patriots as well. I think what Drake May is doing is he's playing great ball. He's probably the best QB out of that class so far, so –
Rams and Patriots, a good old, what is it, 2018 rematch there.
Yeah, that would be pretty good. I wouldn't mind that at all. Being that you're a Chicago Bears fan, how do you feel about Caleb Williams this season so far and what he's been doing, you know, in his, what is it, his third season now?
Second season? Second season, yeah.
I think he's playing great ball. Obviously, people like to look at the counting stats. They're not, like, obviously where they probably should be, but I think what he's doing is just commanding an offense, and obviously you saw with the running game against the Eagles, like that's just what the Bears can do. I think they can keep on that. Just keep showing out. All they got to do is just keep trusting, just keep putting faith in him. He still needs a lot of it. He's still got a lot of improvement, obviously, because his completion percentage this last game was just like, it was not good. He did not complete a lot of passes, but
and then
he still comes out there and still wins every game or almost every game. So.
What are your opinions on the signing of Joe Tooney in the offseason specifically, that former Chiefs offensive lineman, multiple-time Super Bowl winner with not only the Chiefs but also the Patriots and Tom Brady?
He's kind of been a part of every dynasty at this point, you know?
Yeah, no, he's had a hand in really most of the dynasties that we've seen in the last few years. Do you think that he could be doing that with the Chicago Bears as well, the Joe Tooney effect?
Almost says I hope so, but no, he's a great signing, obviously. He's been one of the best. He's still one of the best. I don't know, obviously, like, PFF, what they got him at, they probably got him as like top five, and I agree. He's been great. So,
and the Bears, you know, the Bears have completely revolutionized their offensive line, and I think you can credit a lot of their success to that. You know, they went out and they knew it was a priority in the offseason, and they went and really made sure that something that they got.
Yeah, because they needed that. Because Dahlman was a great signing. He's been great. Jonah Jackson was a great trade. Darnell Wright just got stepped up even higher in a level, so it's just been pretty good.
And on the defense, you know, guys like Nashawn Wright have really stepped up as well.
Yeah, and Nashawn Wright, I just call him legit just Trevon Diggs. He's kind of similar.
Yeah, kind of a lot of picks, gives up a lot of big plays too, yeah. Absolutely. Now, we want to thank you for coming on. Do you have any social media or anything that you want to shout out?
Not really, but obviously my Twitter, but it's at Ben_Wurzbacher if anybody wants to, you know, shoot the follow there. But that's really it. I don't use much social media, as you know, a little bit. So.
All right. Well, we want to thank you for coming on. That was Ben Wurzbacher, scout at SIU. Now,
thank you so much for coming on.
He's gone now.
So yeah, no. If anyone is listening, thank you for coming on. We appreciate your time. And what's our next segment that we have to get into? There's so much sports to talk about this week.
I think, you know, I kind of made this segment because I knew you would want to talk about this. It's a Bucks rant.
Yeah.
I just called it that. Let's get into a rant about the Buccaneers, and I'll let you start because I know how you feel about them.
The Buccaneers right now, you know, favorite team. I'm biased in a lot of ways, but, you know, trying to separate myself from that and, you know, be the most unbiased that I can. The Buccaneers, they really don't look great right now. And you can argue that most seasons they fall into the kind of like a mid-season slump where they're facing some adversity. They have to find a way to handle it. You know, they have to get that chip back on their shoulder. Baker Mayfield needs to log back in and just go and win out a few games and, you know, look good going into the postseason. I don't think that is a consistent model. I don't think that's what you want out of an NFL team. I don't think you want, we're going to suck for half of the games, a little less than half of the games in the season, but we are eventually going to have a winning record and then making the playoffs to be a first or second round exit. I feel like the ambition every year should be not just to save the head coaching job, not just to, you know, do any of that sort of thing. I feel like I'd rather just try to make an actual credited Super Bowl run effort every single season rather than just accept that the Buccaneers win an eggshell division every year. The Buccaneers are all right compared to most teams in the NFL. Yes, the Buccaneers have made the playoffs the last few years in a row. I don't feel like that should be the expectation. I feel like it should just be we should be performing at a higher level than they currently are.
And, you know, I brought this up a few days ago. It's kind of like the Buffalo Bills in a scenario of, you know, they're getting to the playoffs every year, but they're just not making it. And, you know, is that kind of something that you feel like we're kind of like the Bills, or do you think it's a worse scenario?
I feel like it's more similar to the Bills than I feel like people would think. Because the Bills, you know, they have Josh Allen. They have,
That's really it, honestly.
Yeah.
For true, complete superstars, all pros, they really only have that versus the Bucks, who have, you know, in all-pro talents, they've got Mike Evans, Vita Vea.
Exactly.
All these guys.
Which is why I raise another point as to if we have all these, you know, talents that we can eat, that many people around the NFL can recognize by name. You know, Lavonte David, one of the best linebackers in the league. Like you were saying.
Antoine Winfield.
You know, then on the offensive side, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin Jr., you know, Jalen McMillan, who made some noise last year. You know, obviously these guys are injured, but when you're not crediting it to injury, you have to look at who's wasting this talent every year. Todd Bowles, the head coach.
Wow. And I have some breaking news here coming out of Auburn football. It is official, posted by the official Auburn account, that Alex Galesh will be the head coach of Auburn football.
Wow. Yeah, no, that is that's a tough break for a lot of USF Bulls fans. I know I'm, right now I'm pretty upset about it, but...
Two years in a row now.
Yeah.
It happened. I mean, Tampa Bay sports, you know, it goes from Liam Cohen, oh, I'm going to stay. Oh, I don't want to leave. I want to come here and I want to win a Super Bowl. Now Alex Galesh saying last year, you know, I'm not going to leave. I want to stay here and complete this with Byron Brown. And now leaving just days after he said that, and that happened the same thing with Liam Cohen, you know. What is up with guys? And even, you know, this goes back to the transfer portal as well, back in college football, the talk we had with Ben, you know. There's so much of switching up on your word. Like, to me, if I was an NFL team, and, you know, this is specifically, I guess, for coaches, I guess, but also for players, you know, why would a team go after a guy like you if you're just going to switch up on your word and lie to them so much?
Yeah, no, it really doesn't make sense. as to why, you know, these coaches can't really stay true to their word, you know, why they give the fans one sense of false hope and then they decide another, why any of this happens, doesn't make a lot of sense. But, you know, I am ultimately happy for Coach Alex Galesh and, you know, his inevitable success that he will most likely see at Auburn. You know, I wish him nothing but the best. He did bring a lot of good memories, a lot of good times to this USF Bulls football team, this program as a whole. He really revolutionized a lot of things. He put this team in a place.
He turned the USF football program around.
Yeah.
It went from a losing program, kind of ignored, to now people recognize them as a very well above average team.
Yeah, don't be sad that it's gone. Be happy that it happened, you know?
Absolutely. Now, now that we got that out of the way, let's get back to some Buccaneers talk here. And overall, just, I want to say this, and I said this last season too, after the season was over. When you have a guy like Liam Cohen in the building, you cannot let him go. I don't care that Todd Bowles is an above average head coach. I believe me and Tristan had an argument about this for, you know, a good 20-30 minutes the other day after that Bucks versus Rams game. If a coach is going to get you to the playoffs, it's the same thing with the Steelers and Mike Tomlin. If a coach is going to consistently get you to the playoffs and consistently take below average rosters and turn these bad players and all these injuries that the Bucks face and keep them as a good team and keep them as a winning record and a playoff team, then he is a good head coach. It does not matter that he loses some big games, and because everybody loses big games. There's only a select few coaches. I mean, we see it pretty much every year. It's Andy Reid in the playoffs, Andy Reid in the Super Bowl. There's only a certain amount of coaches that can actually get there and win it. But when you have a guy like Liam Cohen, who is 20 years younger, about 20 years younger than Todd Bowles, you've got to think for your future. Todd Bowles has said multiple times in the last few years as well that he doesn't want to be coaching for much longer, whether that's, you know, another 8 years. You could have a guy like Liam Cohen in your building for the next 30 years. You take that opportunity 100% of the time.
Yeah, and it really boils down to, like, okay, so we are now in, what, the third season of Todd Bowles as head coach? Fourth season with Todd Bowles as head coach.
Third with Baker. First one was with Tom Brady.
Yeah, so you just have to look at it like this, right? Okay, they make it to the playoffs every year. There's something holding them back. They changed the offensive coordinator. They changed the quarterback from Tom Brady to Baker Mayfield. Obviously, he retires.
The injuries in the secondary were horrible.
The injuries in the secondary were horrible. They draft. They pick up players. They pick up Hassan Reddick. They draft Benjamin Morris in the second round. They draft Jacob Parrish. They draft Elijah Roberts. They draft Elijah Kansi.
These guys that are such good playmakers and that we can all...
Exactly. They run through. They draft and then run through and trade away Joe Tryon Shoyanka to the Cleveland Browns. You know, so many guys come in and come out, and there's so many things changing, you have to start to wonder, well, what's the one thing that we haven't changed? What's the one thing that could possibly be holding all these big talents back from, you know, playing at their max potential or being the really best that they can? And it's one thing that it seems to be, you know, you have to hold accountable every single time is the head coach. You always have to hold the head coach accountable for, you know, most important decision makings on the team. And it, like I said, it boils down to Todd Bowles at that point. You really just have to look towards Todd Bowles and what is he doing? What has he been doing? And what can he change?
Now, that brings up a different conversation that I want to... I think we lost there for a second. But
yeah,
we are back. That kind of brings up a question that I want to have about Todd Bowles. And do you think that Todd Bowles is actually, you know, elevating these players? Like, what if in a scenario Jamel Dean is not a good corner? What if in these scenarios Jacob Parrish isn't good? What if Antoine Winfield actually isn't good and Todd Bowles is elevating their play only that much more?
I have to say, Todd Bowles is one of genuinely the best defensive minds in the NFL today.
And he's respected as that across the league-wide.
He is a fantastic defensive coordinator. He is great at that, and especially, you know, when he has to, especially in big moments. He's great at making halftime adjustments. But, you know, something that's important to be said is the Buccaneers are constantly adjusting to other teams. Other teams are never adjusting to the Buccaneers. I don't know if you've noticed that, but at a point, we should be setting the tone. We should be going out there and not relying on our defense because we know our defense can eventually come up with a stop because we have a defensive-minded head coach. We should have someone who's pedal to the metal all the time, and Todd Bowles kind of started to realize that in the offseason. He said, hey, the only way we're going to win is if we score points. But, you know, it's really making the most of the opportunities when you have them, and the Buccaneers have not been making the most of the opportunities they've been given recently, and I feel like that's really been hindering their performance as a whole. And, you know, like I said, Todd Bowles is the one you have to hold accountable for that. He's the head coach of the entire, you know, team. So at a point, it really just boils down to Todd Bowles. That's the bottom line, is his performance as a head coach. I do think, like I said, he is a great defensive coordinator. He does elevate these players in some ways. He does, you know, expand these players' minds and, you know, make them see defensive lineups and, you know, coordination that they've never seen before. And it's a completely different scheme than a lot of other schemes. You know, even players like Jordan Whitehead, when they were coming in, they talked about how, you know, different it was than other teams they'd been on. But it's like, you know, it only works to a certain point when you're putting Vita Vea in coverage on wide receivers and stuff. Like, you just have to lock in and make a decision that will positively impact the organization.
I could agree on some of those points, but I also disagree on some of them. You know, I think, you know, where you kind of say he's a good defensive coordinator, the conversation that, you know, me and my dad have had a lot is, should the Buccaneers give up Todd Bowles as being a head coach? Not give up being him a head coach, but should they give up his defensive play calling? My dad does not like the fact that he is a defensive play caller, but in my opinion, I mean, there's really nobody else in the league who does it better, so you can't just take that away from Todd Bowles.
Well, if you take Todd Bowles' defensive play calling away from him, you have nothing. I hate to be like that, but he's not a good enough head coach to not be calling the defense, because that's what he was. He was a defensive coordinator that just wasn't, you know, ended up being the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
The argument I always bring up to him is, you know, although for our scenario it is defense, when you take a look at some of the best head coaches in the league, they are play callers. Dan Campbell now, as of recently, you know, 2-3 weeks, is a play caller. But
after losing Ben Johnson.
Yeah, you know, and the offensive coordinator for them wasn't quite doing it very well, so that he took over play calling duties. But it's also going to, you know, Kyle Shanahan, play caller. The Rams head coach, Sean McVay, play caller. So if your concern is that Todd Bowles is calling plays, simply, it's just not a good argument, because the best head coaches in the league are the ones who calls plays.
Yeah, no, it's essential. It's a part of the game now. You know, the game's ever transforming and changing, you know, and, new parts are being added, and I feel like that's one of the biggest parts of the game that's been changed in the last few years, is head coaches have a bigger role than really ever. You know, they really have to manage a lot now, and it's important. But I see you have the inactive report pulled up for this Arizona Cardinals game.
I do.
Give me the
current
inactive report.
You know, we only have a few minutes here until we get off. The show lives every Sunday from 11 to 12. You know, make sure you tune in, and make sure you follow us on Instagram at Between the Lines Show and on TikTok at Between the Lines Hour. But getting on to the inactive report here, we have, you know, Luke Haggard, who has started some games at guard, so that's a pretty big deal, along with Elijah Klein, and then also Kayvon Merriweather with, I believe, J.J. Roberts. One of the safeties is back and healthy. Can't quite remember his name. It's another depth piece, so they decided to inactivate Kayvon Merriweather. Benjamin Morrison and Elijah Simmons are both inactive. Elijah Simmons being inactive is a real, real down bummer for me, at least.
Yeah.
The last few weeks, you know, he's been really good, but
I like how they work him in the scheme.
Yeah, absolutely. Him kind of rotating plays, but I think what they're doing is they see how much Elijah Roberts is progressing, and they're kind of realizing that they don't need to rotate them as much.
Yeah.
But some big news with that in the inactive report. Connor Bezelik is the sixth guy, and Bucky Irving will be returning to football this week.
That is Dean. Wow. I mean, Bucky Irving returning to football, what, first time since week 4?
And he didn't even get put on the injured list, which is a completely separate issue. We talked about it last week. But Hassan Reddick is also active. Jamel Dean is also active.
Bucks fans will be eating today.
Baker Mayfield, who had some question, big injury, didn't even play the second half with Teddy Bridgewater coming in, will play. So a lot of Buccaneers are coming back. And, you know, that's only a start with Jalen McMillan being cleared now for practice. Mike Evans, I've heard, is getting closer and closer. Kalijah Kancey is now off to the side working with trainers, who was once deemed as a season-ending injury. So the Buccaneers are on the up and up. They're getting healthier, and it's the perfect time of the season to start getting healthy.
Yeah, you know what? I right before you close this out here, you know, we're coming up right on the 59th minute of the podcast this evening, or this morning, I should say, about to be the evening, about to be a Tampa Bay Buccaneers showdown at home versus the Arizona Cardinals at 1 p.m. Of course, this is the pregame show. There's so much to look forward to for not only this game, but for the rest of the season as a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan and really as a Tampa Bay sports fan overall. The Rays are soon to be back in the Trop in April. You know, so many big things. The Rowdies will be back eventually. The Lightning are one of, if not the best NHL team in all of hockey. You know, Tampa Bay sports, it's really almost starting to feel like Tampa Bay once again, I feel like, in a lot of ways. And, you know, you just got to stay optimistic about everything, no matter the injuries, no matter the coaching, no matter anything. We talk a lot about serious stuff on this podcast, and I think it's serious too, you know, that the Buccaneers have a good shot at winning today. And if the Buccaneers can pull out the right stops and do well on offense, then that's what we'll see.
And we want to thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Between the Lines with Tristan and Jake. As always, we'll be live every Sunday from 11 to 12. And make sure you follow our Instagram at Between the Lines Show and on TikTok at Between the Lines Hour. Thank you for listening.